Have you ever said something in the heat of the moment that you instantly regretted? Or maybe you've walked out of a meeting feeling like you completely misread the room, confused about why your great idea fell so flat. What if I told you that the single biggest predictor of your success in life, more than your intelligence, your education, or your experience, is something that most of us are never taught in school? It's not your IQ, but your EQ, or emotional intelligence. The research is startling. 90% of top performers in any field have high emotional intelligence, while only 20% of bottom performers do. So what is this secret ingredient, and how can we get more of it? That's the central promise of the book Emotional Intelligence 2.0, and it offers a roadmap that's both profound and incredibly practical. The book breaks down emotional intelligence, or EQ, into four core skills. Think of them as a journey that starts inside you and moves outward. The first two are about you, self-awareness and self-management. The second two are about your interactions with others, social awareness and relationship management. The book's most powerful message is that unlike your IQ, which is largely fixed from a young age, your EQ is a flexible skill. It can be developed and improved with practice, and that's what we're going to explore. Everything starts with the first skill, self-awareness. This is the absolute foundation. It's the ability to accurately perceive your own emotions as they're happening. It's not about judging your emotions as good or bad, but simply recognizing them for what they are. This might sound simple, but it's something many of us struggle with. The book shares the story of a manager named Carlos who considered himself a passionate and energetic leader. He'd get fired up in meetings, speaking loudly and gesturing emphatically, convinced he was motivating his team. But his team saw it very differently. To them, his passion came across as anger and intimidation. They were afraid to bring up problems or offer new ideas. Carlos had zero idea this was happening. He was blind to the emotional wake he was leaving behind him until he received some tough 360-degree feedback. His intention was positive, but the emotion he was actually broadcasting was creating a culture of fear. He wasn't aware of how his feelings were truly manifesting. That's a classic breakdown in self-awareness. Once you can see your emotions clearly, you can move to the second skill, self-management. This is what you do with that awareness. It's your ability to use your emotions to stay flexible and direct your behavior in a positive way. It's the pause between feeling an emotion and acting on it. Imagine you receive a sharply critical email from your boss. The immediate raw emotion might be a flash of anger or a wave of anxiety. Your primitive brain, the amygdala, gets hijacked. It wants you to fire back a defensive email immediately or stew in resentment for the rest of the day. Self-management is the voice that says, "Wait. Let's not react just yet." The book uses a powerful analogy of a surfer. You can't stop the waves from coming. The ocean is going to do what it does. In the same way, you can't just turn off your emotions. But a skilled surfer doesn't fight the wave. She learns to understand its power and ride it. Self-management is about learning to ride the waves of your own emotions. This could mean taking 10 deep breaths before responding to that email. It could mean going for a quick walk to let the initial intensity fade. It's about choosing your response rather than letting an emotional impulse choose it for you. It's the difference between being a slave to your feelings and being the master of them. After you've started to master your own inner world, you can turn your focus outward to the third skill, social awareness. This is the ability to accurately pick up on the emotions of other people and understand what's really going on with them. It's about more than just hearing the words people say. It's about listening with your eyes and your gut. You're watching for body language, listening for tone of voice, and noticing the subtle shifts in energy that tell you the real story. The book gives an example of a leader named Maria who noticed that one of her star employees, David, had become unusually quiet and disengaged in team meetings. He was still getting his work done, but his usual creative spark was gone. A manager with low social awareness might ignore this, thinking, As long as his numbers are fine, it's not my problem. But Maria knew something was off. She pulled him aside privately and simply asked if everything was okay. It turned out David was dealing with a serious illness in his family and was incredibly stressed. By noticing the unspoken cues and showing genuine concern, Maria did more than just help an employee. She built a foundation of trust and loyalty that you can't put a price on. That's social awareness in action. It's about being present and tuning in to the people around you, making them feel seen and understood. This leads us directly to the final and most complex skill, relationship management. This is where you put the first three skills together. It's using your awareness of your own emotions and your understanding of others' emotions to manage your interactions successfully. This is where you inspire people, resolve conflicts, build bonds, and influence change. It's the most visible of all the EQ skills. The book tells a compelling story about handling a difficult conversation. Imagine you have to announce to your team that a project they've poured their hearts into for months is being canceled due to budget cuts. A leader with poor relationship management might just walk in, state the facts bluntly, and walk out, leaving a wake of confusion, anger, and demotivation. But a leader with high EQ would handle it completely differently. They would start by using their social awareness to anticipate the team's emotional reaction, the shock, the disappointment, the frustration. They would use self-awareness and self-management to keep their own anxiety in check. Then, when delivering the news, they would first acknowledge the team's feelings directly. They might say something like, "I know this is incredibly disappointing news, and I know how much work you've all put into this. It's okay to be frustrated." By validating their emotions first, the leader shows empathy and respect. This clears the air and makes the team far more receptive to the discussion that needs to follow about what comes next. It turns a potential disaster into a moment of trust building, even in the face of bad news. That's the power of relationship management. So how do we begin to build these four crucial skills? The beauty of Emotional Intelligence 2.0 is that it's not about some grand abstract personality change. It's about building small, new mental habits, one at a time. The book is packed with strategies, but let's look at one simple starting point for each of the four skills that you can try this week. For self-awareness, start by becoming an emotional detective. The book suggests you identify your specific triggers. We all know certain situations can make us emotional, but what is it exactly? Don't just say, "I hate my commute." Get specific. Is it the slow driver in the fast lane? Is it the fear of being late? When you can name the precise cause, you can anticipate and prepare for the emotional response. Another great practice is to simply ask yourself several times a day, "What am I feeling right now, and why?" The goal isn't to judge it, but just to observe it, like a scientist studying data. Once you're aware, you can practice self-management. The next time you feel that strong emotion, instead of reacting, the book advises you to literally create space. One powerful technique is to make your goals public. If you know you tend to get defensive in meetings, tell a trusted colleague beforehand, "Hey, I'm working on listening more and reacting less. If you see me getting heated, just a small glance would be a helpful reminder." This accountability creates a powerful motivation to manage your impulses. Another great tool for big decisions is to create an emotion versus reason list. On one side of a paper, write down all the logical pros and cons. On the other side, write down what your emotions are telling you. This helps you see clearly if your feelings are clouding your judgment, allowing you to make a more balanced choice. Next, to build your social awareness, you have to shift from broadcasting to receiving. A fantastic exercise from the book is to practice listening like an anthropologist. In your next meeting, or even at a coffee shop, pretend you don't understand the words being said. Instead, focus entirely on tone of voice and body language. Who is leaning in? Who is looking away? Whose tone is optimistic versus strained? You can learn almost everything you need to know about the underlying emotional current without hearing a single word of content. It trains your brain to pick up on the signals that most people miss. Finally, for relationship management, a powerful habit is to make your intentions clear and authentic. The book highlights the importance of avoiding mixed signals. Before you have an important conversation, ask yourself, "What is the core message I want to convey, and how do I want the other person to feel?" Then make sure your words, your tone, and your body language are all aligned. If you're giving praise, does your voice sound genuinely warm? Do you make eye contact? If you're addressing a problem, is your tone constructive rather than accusatory? This alignment is the foundation of trust and is what transforms difficult conversations into productive ones. These are just starting points, but they illustrate the core idea. Emotional intelligence isn't magic. It's a practice. It begins with the simple choice to pay attention, first to yourself and then to others. And in a world that's constantly pulling us in a million directions, this choice to be present, to understand, and to connect with intention might be the most powerful skill of all. It's the key to not just performing better at work, but to living a richer, more connected, and more resilient life.